It is a great pleasure to welcome to European Investing Summit 2021, Santiago Domingo Cebrián, an analyst at Magallanes Value Investors. Magallanes is an independent equity-only asset management firm following value investment philosophy and controlled by its founders. Magallanes' aim is to preserve and increase its clients' capital by outperforming the market in the long term. Prior to Magallanes, Santiago worked as an equity portfolio manager for Solventis Asset Management, as an analyst for a startup called Oral Surgery Tube, and in Endesa's finance department. Santiago holds a bachelor's degree in finance and accounting from University of Zaragoza, and a master's degree in institutions and financial markets from CUNEF. Always a pleasure to have you with us, Santiago. I've greatly enjoyed your presentations in the past and look forward to this one as well. And now I will turn it to you. Please go ahead.
Okay, John, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to participate again in the European Investing Summit. I would like to say hello with my hand to all the people that is hearing us, but you know, as we talked before, probably in some months, in some quarters, we will be able to see us again face to face. For all of you that don't know Magallanes Value Investors, I would like to present a bit our firm, and afterwards we can deepen into the investment thesis that we are going to talk today. Well, Magallanes Value Investors is an equity long-only asset management founded 7 years ago. It's totally independent for us. This is one of the keys in the asset management because it allowed to us to act in the same way we think we can do the best for us and for our clients, because at the end of the day we are in the same ship, we can say in that way, because we are totally aligned with our participants. More than 20% of our assets under management are internally owned. We have a family business culture in the company, in the asset management, that is the same family business culture that we look for in the companies we are invested in. Right now, we manage around 2.2 billion euro, more or less, and we are specialized in one strategy, the European equity strategy, with a value investing philosophy, with three different strategies within each. The most important one in terms of assets under management is the European strategy, with around 85% for assets, the Iberian equity with 10%, and microcaps with around 5%. And as John mentioned before, our main priority is to preserve and increase the capital over the long run. Well, let's talk about Iberpapel. Iberpapel is the investment thesis that we thought was the best for the environment that we are living right now, and obviously because of the cheap valuation and the great skills of the managers of the company and the company itself. For all of you that doesn't know Iberpapel is a Spanish company, a Spanish paper company. It was set up in Hernani, a small town here in Spain, in 1935, so many years ago, and since then has engaged in paper manufacture and marketing, primarily in printing and writing paper. Was listed in 1997, more or less. The group has operations mainly here in Spain, where most of the sales are concentrated, but also in South America, where they have some wood, and also in North Africa. This is the typical business model, where the production process is fused with industrial flexibility, productivity, and cost leadership. One of the key topics here is that they are fully integrated. We can say from the forest to the paper, because they manage some hectares in the forestry activity. They manufacture their own pulp, and afterwards they produce and market the paper with a paper capacity of around 250 kilotons per year. One of the things that it's more interesting is that they are so conservative running the company. I mean, they have a strong balance sheet. Its net cash position was around 47 million euro at the end of the first half of this year. They will end the year probably beyond 60 million euro. And this compares with a market cap of no more than 200 million euro. I mean, almost 30%. It's in net cash, what's very good for any company. And we will talk later about that, but they are right now immersed in a growth project where they have invested around 80 million euro. So we will probably see we will reap all the benefits of this growth project in the future. And they have a very experienced management team. Iñigo Echevarría is the chairman and CEO, more than 25 years in the company, of which I think 12 years as chairman, and he holds around 1.7% of share capital, so totally aligned, so totally skin in the game. And for instance, Luis González, that is the CFO of the company, is in the company for many years, and I think it's more than 8 years as CFO. So we can say that Iberpropel, it's a company with a lot of key points that we really like in any investment. So before deepening into Iberpropel main things, we would like to talk a bit more about the paper market, as we did in other presentations here in the European Investing Summit. We like to talk about the sector to understand where the company that we are analyzing is, and afterwards to deepen into that company. So I think this is very basic, but it will be very insightful for all of you that doesn't know how it works. That is how paper is made. You have many videos in YouTube or wherever about this topic, but I think it's very, very interesting, this graph, because all begins when you have the wood. When you have the wood, the process begins. It's important also to say before beginning with the process that also energy is produced over this process. Okay, once you have the wood, the first thing you have to do is to prepare that wood for paper processing. So the bark is stripped from the logs, which are then processed into chips of a standard size. This is the debarking and chipping process that you see that. Afterwards, you have the cooking of the wood in the digester that you have also there. And the key thing here is to separate the things that we need for paper marking and the things that we don't need. We need the cellulose fibers or some kind of pulp from the lining that we don't need in that process. Afterwards, it's the missing, you have to bleach the pulp, because the raw pulp is usually brown color. So you need to bleach in order to get a whiter color in the pulp that is needed for the next stages of the process. Afterwards, it's a key point, because if you are a paper company and you are fully integrated, you use that pulp for your process. In the case you are just a pulp company, you sell that pulp directly to the paper companies that need it. In that case, you need to do a very, very intensive drying process to sell that pulp to third parties. In the case of the paper companies that are fully integrated as Iberpapel, need to do some kind of pre-dyeing process, but that pulp is directly used in the paper processing, paper making, as you see in the graph. In this case, what happens is that the paper passes through the rubber clad rolls, where a stark solution is applied to the paper surface to improve interaction between the paper surface and printing inks. After this application, the paper is moist and has to be dried again in the part of the machine that we call the post dryer. Afterwards, more rumble reels are then processed into smaller reels, We can say that in this last stage, what we have is the cut size production, where we can see how this paper is cut in A4 formats, in A3 formats, or whatever, or even it's directly sold in reels, coils, or whatever. So once we understood all this process that come from the wood to the pulp to the paper to the final production, the cut size production, let's go to the key segments of the paper market. Global paper production is around 400 million tons per year, more or less. And this is there are different segments within that paper industry. You have newsprint, tissue, packaging, printing and writing, and other paper and board. Probably newsprint, along with printing and writing, are the more mature segments, and tissue and packaging are the most growing segments. We are going to focus on printing and writing mainly, because it's the most important part of the Iberpapel production. We think that is very, very important to know in which segment each paper company operates in order to understand what dynamics and drivers affect you the most. So in the case of Iberpapel, as I mentioned, they are mainly in this segment that first glance is one of the most mature, even more hated sub-industry within the paper sector. But it's important not only to take a look to the demand of a product, but also to take a look to the supply of that product, and obviously to the special characteristics of the company that we are analyzing, in this case, Iberpapel, because usually actions speak louder than words. And if we take a look to the special segment, this printing and writing segment, and especially to the uncoated wood-free paper, and that is the traditional A4 and format and whatever kind of paper sheet, we see in the left chart how the demand decreased in 2020 due to this COVID-19 situation and all that kind of thing. And we see also how in the developed markets, North America, Western Europe, it's true that the demand is going down, but in China, is going a bit up each year. But we are going to focus more on the right-hand chart, because it's what affects most to Iberpapel, that is this uncoated wood-free paper demand and capacity in Western Europe. Here, what we see is a clear trajectory, and this clear trajectory, down trajectory in terms of demand. If you see the graph from 2009 to 2020, the demand of this kind of paper decreased for 2 million tons, more or less. And this is mainly due to the digitalization trend. We know that digitalization trend is going to be with us during many years, but it's also true that this was accelerated due to this COVID-19 pandemic, and during this year, 2021, the paper demand, this paper demand is recovering a bit, I think 6% year to date, because of the reopening of the schools, people coming back to the offices, and all that kind of thing. So we assume digitalization as a challenge, but also as a opportunity, because if you see the capacity evolution, it also decreased a lot in these 11 years, and it will decrease a bit more during this year, because what several companies announced over the beginning of this year and right now is that they are going to decrease around 1 million tons the capacity. So we will probably have a year 2022 with a capacity that will be less than 5 million tons, and the demand will be probably around 4.5 million tons. So it will be more or less balanced again, because always you have some more capacity in Europe than demand of this kind of paper. But with inventories that are so low, demand growing a bit and capacity decreasing, because companies are more interested in other kind of of papers, you have a very interesting situation for this kind of companies, because this leaves a positive scenario in terms of supply and demand, driving a positive pricing performance that, as we will see now, is one of the key topics here as well. Because you see, here you have in the orange line the pulp price, and in more black line the A4B copy or the paper price. The first thing, the movements of the paper are quite more smoother than the pulp prices. Pulp prices recovered strongly over this year, more than 60%. Since 2020 lows. Paper prices are recovering as well, but they usually do more slowly, as you can see that. The Navigator, that is the European leader in the paper industry here in Western Europe, in this kind of paper, they increased prices 3 times during this year. More or less clients are saying okay, and other companies like Iberpapel that are much more smaller are followers in terms of prices and are increasing a bit also their prices. As I mentioned before, paper is going to recover due to this reopening of the economies and people coming back to the public administration offices, universities, and all that kind of things. It's important to say, to understand these prices, that the supply, paper supply, it's a bit inelastic. I mean, they are working 100% capacity utilization, except for maintenance stoppage and all that kind of things. So when there is a recession, like it happened over the last year, it's complicated not to see price decreases. I mean, when you have a demand that is decreasing the last year and supply is inelastic, you must sell your production, so you must decrease your prices. And I think also here that it's important about to talking about the last man standing strategy. I mean, sometimes when we look at mature industries, that the main segment is decreasing in terms of volumes or wherever, we see, okay, we have to exit from this place. And that shouldn't be the right strategy. Obviously, you have to take a look to each industry. But in the case of Iberpapel, they are able to gain even market share in this situation. They are able to maintain prices, even increase these prices. So we will talk about that a bit later, but it's important not only to driving or to guiding us by the demand, but also to take a look to the supply, because if it's more or less balanced, these companies can make a lot of money, as they did in the past and as they are doing right now. And another key topic here is the integration. We mentioned before, but higher pulp prices suppose more pressure to non-integrated producers, because they must buy a pulp that is much more expensive. So they can't be as aggressive as the integrated players in terms of prices. And here, what we see is that in the uncoated wood free paper, around 70% of the players are integrated and 30% is not integrated. This is a special topic for this kind of paper, because in the tissue production, for instance, I think it's around one quarter of the manufacturers are integrated. In the case of these companies, or in the case of all of these topics that we are seeing here, it's important to mention that Iberpapel, that we can see here in Sikuñaga, they are completely integrated. And this is very, very important, because in times with these high pulp prices, they are even long in pulp, because they did a growth investment that we will talk later on. And they are right now even with more pulp than they need. So it's a very nice scenario for a company like Iberpapel. So once we understood what are the dynamics in the market, what supposed the demand, but also we understood the supply, the inventories are low, the prices are healthy. So let's take a look to the special characteristics of Iberpapel. Well, in the case of Iberpapel, they sell around 60% of their production in Spain. As you probably know, paper is not doesn't travel well because, you know, it's much space for a small value added product. So usually it travels, but just a hundredth of kilometers. It doesn't mean that you don't have paper from Asia or North America here in Europe, but it is because some paper manufacturers in those countries are so cheap that they are able to export part of their production. One of the key things is that Iberpapel made a change in 2010. Until 2010, they were so focused in the printing and writing segment, most around 98% of their sales. Then they decided to migrate part of the production towards the flexible packaging, using the same machines that they had, but doing flexible packaging. Only in white color due to their machine restrictions. When we talk about flexible packaging, we talk about manufactured coils and reels that are used for labeling, that are used for other kind of paper usage that are not as linked as the A4 format and all that kind of things to probably the digitalization and all that kind of things. Right now, the product mix of Iberpapel is 35% are reels for paper making, 35% is A4, A3, all that kind of formats, and around 30% is these other formats, flexible packaging and other things. And this is very important because this diversification shows us that companies, and Iberpapel is a dynamic company. I mean, you can be in a segment these days, but if you are able to generate cash and you are able to see opportunities, you can diversify away from this paper in this case and to make money in other places. And believe me, they are making money in all the products, most of the products that they say, and we will say, and we will see later on. And I would like to remember or to reiterate some of the competitive advantage or some of the keys of this industry that Iberpapel has. First of all, as an integrated group, this is key in this business because when the pulp is so low, your competitor, your non-integrated competitors are so aggressive. So you are able to maintain more or less, but when the pulp is high, you are able to dominate the market, the integrated players, because you know you don't have the pressure from that raw material. It's true that in such a commoditized sector, because at the end of the day, it's paper, developing competitive advantage is complicated, but to be integrated is key. Another key thing also is the flexibility. Iberpapel is a small company, so they are able to work in for small batches that other players can do that. And they are also able to sell their production easily. You know, they sell around 230, 250 kilotons per year in a market in Europe that is around 5 million tons, as we saw before. So it's not complicated to sell it. And one thing that you can develop in a commoditized sector, as we saw with different industries, is to be the low-cost producer or one of the low-cost producers. And Iberpapel is leader in production and costs. And they, when we talk to them, they insist on cost control to continue to being leaders in productivity because it allows you to face the economic situation with results that are above the trend in the sector. And because of being integration, one of the key things of this industry, but mainly of Iberpapel, we would like to deepen a bit more even because they also have some forestry activities. I mean, they have wood also, not only the pulp production or the pulp industry, the pulp capabilities. They own around 26,000 of hectares here in Spain, but mainly also in Uruguay and Argentina. They have obviously the pulp production, as we mentioned before. They are able to produce around 240 kilotons per year. This is especially important, and only for your knowledge, to do or to make 1 kilogram of paper, you need usually 0.8 kilograms of pulp. So they are long in pulp, as I mentioned before. In all this process, you generate massive energy, and they have two power generation plants, one biomass cogeneration power plant and one gas cogeneration power plant. So they are long also in energy because they produce more than they need. It's true that the CO2 rights are putting pressure right now in their P&L, and it weighed around 2-3 million euros the last year, and it will weigh much more over this year. But they are able more or less to balance that, to offset that cost in one way or another. And as I mentioned before, they have a paper production of 250 kilotons per year. So I mentioned also this growth project, the Nani project. It's a nice project that they announced it in 2017, but they had many problems in the road over the road. The key thing of Fernani project was to continue to diversify away from uncoated wood-free paper. This project that it's kind of a brownfield, it's for increase their exposure to specialty papers. I mean, packaging paper for shopping bags, food bags, hygiene clothing worn by insurgents or whatever. I mean, all these other kind of paper. As I mentioned before, they had many obstacles in the way. I mean, they had a high voltage line that crossed the plant that delayed the process. The building license took a lot of time. Environmental license took a lot of time. They right now have the final authorization, but they are right now taking a look to the different options that they have for the futures. We can see that this project is in a wait and see mode, but we will think that over the coming quarters, over the coming months, we will have some news, because they have already invested around 80 million euro in this project, mainly in the pulp production that is working on right now. So they must invest around another 130 million euros additional. This project is not included in our base case a scenario, because we believe that because of being in the standby mode, we prefer to be conservative. But it's a very good project where you have invested money, and where you have the possibility to expand your capabilities beyond the traditional paper. And we feel that this management team is so prepared to do that, because they are doing that for the last 20 years. So, I mean, it's not something new for them. So, finally, in terms of valuation, what we would like to mention is that the moment is very good. It's very good because the traditional paper, the uncoated wood-free paper, is recovering 6% more year to date. It's true that the last year was awful. But what's more important, the capacity in Europe is so, so low, because it's decreasing. Many, many players are reconverting or converting part of their capacity to packaging or other things. Moreover, supply disruptions are good for European paper producers, because as I mentioned before, some Asian producers usually exported paper to Europe because they were so, so low cost, as you can imagine. But due to these freight cost rates that are at the highs, I mean, 7-8 times more than they were, say, 1 year ago, more or less, they are not able to export anymore to Europe. The same thing happened to some North American players. So we can say that right now, the European paper industry, it's more or less isolated. So demand must match with the capacity that you have. And this is a very good scenario for companies like Iberpapel. And finally, and this is in terms of market, and the people, investors, are eager of finding small cap value stocks. And we will show you in terms of valuation that Iberpapel is one of them. one of the key things here also is that Iberpapel is a company that creates value, and they did over the last 15 years. And if we take a look to this same graph over the last 25 years, will be something similar. They are able to create value above 7% per year, taking into account the increase in tangible book value plus dividend yield. They usually don't do any kind of M&A or whatever. All the things that they did was organic. For us, this graph is very important because it shows you how the company is able to make money, to return to the shareholders, and at the end of the day, to create value. That it's the thing that all of us look for in any investment. So if we finally looked at the valuation, we did three scenarios. Right now, the current price is around 20 euros. This is more or less around 220 million euros of market cap. A pessimistic scenario that is valuing the company at all-time low price to tangible book value, meaning a replacement value of 0.7 times, we would have a downside of 16%. We think this is very, very unrealistic, but at the end of the day, most of the pessimistic scenarios are in some way unrealistic. I mean, right now, Iberpapel is trading at 0.8, 0.9 times a tangible book value. In a going concern scenario, with an EBITDA of 37 million euros that they got in the past. I mean, this is not all-time highs. It's close to, but it's not all-time highs. And we think they'll got this EBITDA over 2022. This year, they are going to be more about 30, 32 million euros. We think in this scenario, the company have an upside of 80%. Because if we take a look to the EV, the enterprise value that they have right now, that is around 160 million euro, more or less. And you take this EBITDA of 37 million euro, I mean, this company is trading less than 5 times EBITDA or less than 4 times EBITDA. I mean, it's so, so cheap. And if we talk to the optimistic scenario, we include Hernani Project with those kind of papers, specialty papers with higher margins, with all the integration, with all the money that they already invested. Probably this company value is more than double, 44 euros. I mean, and Iberpapel was trading around 36 euros per share, more or less, 2 years, 3 years ago when they announced this project. I mean, this is not a price that they didn't reach in the past. I mean, it's something that they did it in the past, but in these moments, markets is not recognizing all the value that Iberpapel has. And finally, some final remarks about the investment thesis. This is an uncool industry. It's out of the radar of most. The people don't like paper industry, so intensive in capital, so intensive in a industry that when we took a look from the outside, we see like a down industry, but we feel that companies like Iberpapel can do very well in this scenario as they did over the last 11 years. Because remember, during the last 11 years, the paper demand, the kind of paper that Iberpapel does, was decreasing. And they were able to generate more than 7% value creation per year. So the last money strategy works well, and they are able to diversify away from the traditional paper as well. They have a very good track record, as I mentioned, more than 7% of value creation. They have experienced management. Iñigo Echavarria, Luis, they are very good managers. They did over the last decades, they were able to create value. They are totally aligned with the company, so we feel pretty, pretty comfortable with them taking the helm, more at the helm of the company. They have a strong balance sheet, as we mentioned before. They have right now 47 million euro net cash, and they will finish the year with more than 60 million euro, we think. And this is a very cheap valuation because it is trading around 4, 5 times EBITDA, as I mentioned before. So this is very, very nice for an investor. And just to to give you three recommendations. We have a book called Steel that for me is one of the best that I read over the last year. It talks about the merger of Arcelor and Mittal. It's a mix of a thriller with finance, with different financial agents. I mean, there are many characters in this book that I feel will like to anybody that love these kind of transactions. A Serious Band of Brothers, I talk about it in the last European Investing Summit. I think it's one of the best in the HBO and my favorite. And finally, a sentence, no, an investor who has all the answers doesn't even understand all the questions. A know-it-all approach to investing will lead probably sooner than later to disappointment, if not to outright disaster. This is a phrase from John Templeton, from Sir John Templeton. And I feel this is very, very interesting because you must know what's your competence circle. You must know where your limits are, because if you are able to give answers to all the things, or you are a genius, that is not easy to be a genius, or sometimes you are talking about things that you don't know quite well. So we must know what's our competence circle and to know our limits, because if we are able to be in those limits and to be one of the best inside our competence circle, we will be a very good investor over the long term. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Santiago, for this presentation, and especially for doing it. I know you're a little bit under the weather, so I really appreciate you doing this today. And also for the interesting investment thesis on this contrarian idea. I'm wondering how you think about capital allocation by the company going forward. What's the right mix of reinvestment versus perhaps return of capital?
This is a very interesting question, John. They usually generate, without taking into account the growth project, around 18, 20 million euro free cash flow per year in the last, 10 years. This is a free cash flow yield of 10% more or less. That is not common in the market right now, and less in any kind of industry, I would like to say. And they usually, what they do is to distribute some kind of dividend. I think this year the dividend will be around 2% more or less. It will probably increase a bit over the coming quarters. They don't usually do share buybacks because it's true that it's a small company and it is a liquid stock, so it's not an option right now. They found this growth project, their Nani project, that you must invest an additional 130 million euro. They have financing in place, but they can use also the cash that they have and part of the cash generation that they are going to generate to finance that project. So over the long term, and if they don't find any other interesting growth project for the coming years, and taking into account that it's a business that generates a huge amount of cash, what we probably will see is more dividends to come, and we will see also the cash that increases a bit more, because it's important to be net cash in this industry. Even though they generate a huge cash over the long term, they have some periods, recession periods, where it's not good news for them, for anybody, but for them, no, because it's a cyclical industry. So over the long term, we will see, I think, net cash position, this growth project finish, and obviously an increase probably in the share distribution, in the dividend distribution for the shareholders. We will hope it will be in that way, and we'll have a good company generating good cash, sharing with the distributing to the shareholders, and to continue to generate value as they did in the past, because we think this is the best proof of a company.
How should we think about the cyclicality of this business? And do you basically look to play the cycle with your investment approach, or is this something you would just hold long term?
This is a good question. Well, in our case, we have Iberpapel since Magallanes was founded. I mean, in 2014. I mean, more than 7 years ago. And in the past, we also had in other firms. So, I mean, it's a long-term investment for us. It's true that it's cyclical, and it's true that you can play that cyclicality, but it usually doesn't get to the price that you say, okay, I have to sell this company, because it's always a bit more. Because when it was at 36 euros per share, it's true that it was very close to the base scenario valuation, but you had a piece of news that was this project that, if you take a look, it can generate an additional 7-8 euros per share. So what we think, we see Iberpapel as a long-term investment, because you see them generating value year after year. On average, that 7%. In recessions, they suffer a bit, but they have net cash, so they are able to gain market share when other players go under. They are able to maintain prices, even increase. And at the end of the day, they are diversifying to other kind of papers that have a better margin. So we find this company as a long-term investment. It's true that if someday Iberpapel goes, I don't know, 40, 50 euros per share, okay, probably it's going to be time to rethink what to do about the position. But if they continue to generate this 7-8% value creation per year, and this road project go ahead, and they are able to gain market share, we think, really think, that this is a very good and nice long-term investment thesis and story.
What is your view of industry consolidation, and do you think Iberpapel can take advantage of the next downturn to perhaps acquire competitors on the cheap, given its net cash position?
This is a good question, John. Based on the history of Iberpapel, they are not company acquirers. I mean, they have a unique asset based here in Spain, based here in Hernani. They were able to grow that asset to 2,000 to 250,000 kilotons per year. So even they have net cash, they are going, or they prefer to invest that in organic growth or in the dividend distribution. It's true that we could see some consolidation, but I mean, this is a regional business. For instance, Navigator, that is a big company, the biggest company in this specific segment. It's a Portuguese company that we also own through the holdings, Emapa, quoted in the Portuguese market. Most of their assets are in Portugal. I mean, it is very, very regional. So, in summary, we don't think Iberpapel is going to be interested in acquiring any company. And we don't see it also to be a target to any company. It's true that there are several families behind them. It's true that there is one company called Miqueli Costas with a 5% of the company, also a small treasure company based here in Spain that we also own, that it has a 5% of Iberpapel, but they find this as a financial investment, not anymore, not anything beyond that. So we find that Iberpapel is going to continue to grow in its own path through its organic growth at this pace, as it did in the past, and they are not going to do any crazy thing over the coming years, and we will hope to they won't do never. So, answering to your question, I take so long. I don't think they are going to invest money in organic opportunities.
Okay, wonderful. I will leave it there, Santiago. I would just encourage our members to feel free to follow up directly with any further thoughts or questions. And we are, of course, always happy to facilitate an introduction as well. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us this year and to share your investment thesis.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye for now.